The Space God Memoirs. Episode 13. I stood atop the flat roof of the lab, a warm evening wind tussling my thick hair as I glanced out over the city. From up there atop the cylinder, Ganadria spread out before me, the ramshackle homes of the poorer districts looking like so many piles of garbage beside the old city, which rose above it all, its heavy metal buildings ordered and angular, sad and rusty relics from a long dead age, casting shadows over a random mess of a town. But in the reddish glow of the fading sunlight, it all seemed kind of pretty. Poetic in a way, its inequality barely visible from this distance. Its stench only hinted at in the light breeze. Its problems far away. Hours had passed since we had tested the ship. Most of the crew were in their quarters now, ready for some early snoozing. But not me, not Ven. Ven sat upon a cushion near the middle of the roof, his two legs folded over themselves in a position someone of my biology could never achieve. His lower hands at rest upon his lap, his upper ones hanging loose at his side. The bug man took a deep breath and exhaled, a soft hum coming from his mouth.
"Have a seat, Mr. Kef,"
he said, pointing at a cushion opposite him.
"This is my favorite place here in the city,"
he continued, once I had sat.
"It allows me to observe, to stand aloof from the problems in my own lab, and the problems out in Ganadria. It is said that to truly master a situation, one must step beyond it and view it with detachment. When in the muck of everyday life, you are carried away with emotions, with doubts, fears, and worries. But rise above it all, and you could see it for the orderly pattern it is."
"Huh," I replied, peeking out at the distant city again, seeing the shadow of the fallen metal giant growing longer and longer as the sun slowly sank towards the southern horizon. "Venerated Vuldao wisdom," I noted. "Probably stretching back before your people were stranded here. I see the point. Kind of like how us kids used to go up behind the old waterfall back in Vandrus whenever things would get weird. Perspective."
"Indeed,"
he buzzed.
"And there is a certain perspective we must acquire if we wish to get our ship fully functional. If we seek to impress the king, we must unlock the true capabilities of the shift engine."
"Hold on, isn't it always using the shift engine? That's what lets it fly in the first place."
"Indeed. Yet we must go a step further. We must perform a complete dimensional shift, which is what differentiates such an engine from a simple rocket or a hover car. It is what allows the ships to travel to the stars, to truly explore the universe. That is what we are seeking, Kef, and why this project is so valuable to both us and the Royals."
"Honestly," I began, "I'm not even sure what all that means. Complete dimensional shift? I'm just a scrapper, Ven, not a tech head like Rayleigh." Ven clicked his mandibles.
"You are far more than you believe yourself to be, Kef. You wear the mask of a fool to hide your true self, but you are no fool. Still, I will explain what I can to you. Our traditions teach that the world that you see before you is only one of many."
"You mean like the other planets in the sky?"
"No, that may be the case, but it is not what I refer to. The Vulta believe in multiple realities, different dimensions, you could say, or layers of existence. Our senses only detect a fraction of what is real, but we feel that there is infinitely more, extending out forever. Some of these other realities are similar to our own, differing only in details. Others are altogether more varied and strange, containing sights that would bring one to either ecstasy or to madness. In the eldest days, our mystics were said to be able to travel between them at will, having obtained mastery over their own minds and bodies.
Right, I said. Sounds kind of religious to me. Like the overworld, the EO we're always talking about, which everyone thinks is some invisible place up there in the sky. Buzzed Ven.
That may have a kernel of the truth within it. The Vulda do not worship gods, and I have not had experiences of this overworld, but I would speculate that given an infinite number of dimensions, some might contain things similar to what the religious believe in.
Ven stopped, tapping his hand against the metal floor below him.
But I digress,
he continued.
You get to the point. The shift engine operates on this same principle. By changing the vibration of the vessel and all within it, the engine transports you between our reality and those most closely connected with it. It allows you to hover, for example, like you have already seen, by placing itself in a between place that is not affected by gravity or wind. On the same principle, if you have it perform a greater shift in vibration, you can make it vanish from our sight, or even transport you across great distances.
So I guess that's what you want me to do, I responded. Shift myself across time and space into some other dimension. I don't know, sounds kinda suicidal. I might end up in some world covered in fire, or in a belly some trans-dimensional slug.
That is why we are only going to perform the smallest possible shift that will still give us tangible results. You are not likely to get such extreme changes as you mentioned. Most likely, you'll pop up in a connected reality that much resembles our own, with infinitesimal differences. According to our records, derived from the research of Montaki Labs, we have their most commonly used frequency when they were testing the shift engine.
And how do I go there?
Simple. When you connect with the ship, enter the meditative state like we practiced, then command it to shift. Simultaneously, think of this number, imagining it vividly in your mind's eye. 0.0023. Do this until you begin to feel the shift itself. To return, merely broadcast the phrase baseline to the ship.
Sounds simple enough, I said.
Simple indeed, but requiring precise visualization and focused will. You must dedicate it to memory and practice it well, else the ship's mind will fail to receive the proper input, with chaos resulting.
All right, I noted. Practice, then. He nodded. We sat silent for about a minute, the cool wind blowing down on us, hearing the distant sounds of merchants wheeling their carts back from the market, or the random screams of city folk. 0.0023. Weird number. Wonder what it stood for, if anything. The shadows had spread across nearly the whole city now, and the last sliver of sunlight was vanishing behind the southern hills. I closed my eyes, fell into the three-in, three-out breathing, and did my best to keep that wacky number in my mind. The following night in the lab, I was finally ready, as was old Disa. Calming my nerves with a short round of breathing exercises, I stepped into it and shut the door. The only person watching me was Ven, who sat cross-legged upon a crate at the far side of the lab. I did my best to ignore him. I sat in the pilot's chair and once more placed my hands on the command slots. I closed my eyes and breathed into the slots. I gave the mental command and immediately felt the ship turn on, its familiar presence like a tingle in my thoughts. For an unknown amount of time, I sat there basking in it, feeling the invisible psychic link, caressing my mind, like I was bathing in the mental equivalent of a warm tub of water. I breathed in and breathed out three counts, focusing on the steady rhythm of the air entering and leaving my chest. I did that until the excited jitters had left me and my stray thoughts had melted away. Then it was just me and the ship's mind. I opened my eyes. The now familiar sight of the blue-lit interface greeted me. Okay, I thought. It's shift time. I again breathed into the panels and gave the command, shift. 0.0023. 0.0023. 0.0023. emanated from my mind, and I made sure to visualize each digit meticulously. I wasn't sure if anything was happening at first, but then I began to feel a whirring sensation all around me. That had to be the mercury rotating in the engine. Then I started to see it, like a distortion in the air, as if the scenery around me was being twisted in some kind of funnel, the lab melting away like it was washing down a drain. For an instant, it was gone. Then it was back, but not quite. It pretty much looked like the lab out there, but something was off. Firstly, Ben was nowhere to be seen. I was alone. The colors were different, the floor and walls both looking washed out and pastel. Some of the boxes had colors I couldn't even name, that I had never seen before. And the more I looked out at the scene, the weirder it felt. Like if I looked hard enough at the wall, I would be able to see through it, like the wall wasn't real. And something about the room wasn't right either, as if the proportions were somehow wrong. Even though everything seemed to fit, it was as if the distance between things was different, in some indescribable and yet utterly irritating way. My stomach started to get awfully queasy, and the rest of me felt all stretched out. Baseline, I thought, again closing my eyes. Without any light show this time, I was back, in the lab. In our lab. Ben stood up and walked over to the ship, his antennae twitching happily. I walked out, feeling a momentary dizziness, which soon faded, plus a mild sense of not quite belonging, which faded shortly after. We marked that down as a success. Ben noted that there would be several more tests tomorrow. I went to bed in my little room off the lab and dreamt of zooming through cascading starscapes, past multicolored cosmic dust and planets of all varieties. It wasn't quite a dream of deep sleep, but more of a pattern that kept running in my mind whenever I'd drift off. A bit weird, but when you're experimenting with spaceships and dimensional travel, not weird enough to get concerned over. The next day, after Burge and Demmer had thoroughly inspected the ship, I tried it again, this time in front of most of the crew. Again, everyone vanished from sight as my view transitioned to that lab that was not quite ours. The colors still off, the distances and angles all subtly wrong. This time, my stomach felt fine, and using Ven's breathing exercises, I was able to shake off the vertigo. There was still a weird feeling, as if something huge was lurking just outside of the walls of the lab, waiting and watching. I just focused on my breathing and kept myself in the moment. Baseline, I shortly told the ship, and was rapidly sent back to a more comfortable reality. That day was pretty similar to how the rest of my week went. While the others were busy with their calculations, their adjustments, and their repairs, I was off practicing visualizing numbers when I wasn't in the cockpit, doing yet another test run. Before that week was through, we had gotten a messenger from the palace, inviting us to demonstrate our tech before King Rudus himself. The following days were the most hectic of all, filled with tedious test runs, practices, and dreams of flying. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Space God Memoirs. Space God is written, performed, and produced by A.M. Arctos. Original musical score by Alpha Colors. Various sound effects created by Industrial Strength Records Incorporated. Please support this podcast by following, rating, and sharing on your favorite social media site. For further info on Space God, its creator, and various other opinions, musings, and thoughts, go to www.spacegodmemoirs.com or follow me on Instagram, Twitter, or Facebook. If you enjoyed the Space God Memoirs, please consider supporting us by becoming a patron. Check out the Patreon link in our description to learn more.